Welcome to Docs in a Pod, presented by WellMed. Over the next half hour, Docs in a Pod will educate you about the health and wellness of adults everywhere. Co-host Dr. Audrey Berea and former television broadcaster Gina Galaviz will share information to improve your health and well-being. And now here are Gina Galaviz and Dr. Audrey Berea.
Welcome to the award-winning Docs in a Pod, presented by WellMed. I'm your host, Gina Galaviz Eisenberg, sitting in today for Ron Aaron. We're so pleased to have you with us. Docs in a Pod is available on podcast, wherever you get your podcasts. And we're also on the radio in several cities in Texas and Florida. Each week, we talk about a variety of health and wellness related issues as they impact Medicare eligible seniors and others. Our co-host today is nurse practitioner Olivia Rahman. She earned her nursing degree at Florida State University in Tallahassee. She earned her master's degree in nursing at the University of South Florida in Tampa. Olivia is board certified in family practice. You can find her at the WellMed at 9th Avenue Clinic in St. Petersburg, Florida. For you Ohio State fans out there, she's from the great state of Michigan, and she's also a competitive singer and still sings today, and she's the proud mom of two fur babies, a yellow lab, and a golden retriever. Welcome, welcome, Olivia. I'm so glad you're here.
Thanks, Gina. I'm glad to be here.
And you know, where we live in Florida and Texas, and well, all over the United States for that matter, April is important because it's National Minority Health Month, and it's a time to raise awareness about the importance of improving the health of racial and ethnic minority communities and also reducing those health disparities. And we know there are health disparities, whether it's in seeking medical treatment or coming to the doctor or even having health insurance. Olivia, do you find that, you know, minorities are just sometimes afraid to go because they're afraid of what they might find out? I don't know.
Sure. So I think that a big part is the lack of health insurance. Minorities are, you know, across the board, have a slightly lower rate of being insured, whether that's private insurance, Medicare, Medicaid insurance. So access to medical care is probably one of the larger issues leading them to being, you know, not as cared for. And I guess that would be the top thing I think about.
Can I speak to that as well? I think when we
Well, I tell you what, though, Dr. Mobley, let me just introduce you. Drum roll. That's Dr. Mobley, everybody. I didn't introduce you yet. Let me just give a little bit about your background. You're an associate medical director over skilled nursing care in Tampa Bay, Florida, an associate medical director as well with the Optimum Care of Florida. So take it away, Dr. Mobley.
So I think one of the biggest issues, and it's historic, and I know people hate when we go back to many, many years ago, but in order to truly fix a problem, we have to know what the root of it is. And so where the root lies is first and foremost, trusting the healthcare system. We have to remember something called the Tuskegee Airmen, where airmen who dedicated their lives to service were illegally and uninformed getting injected with syphilis, and some of which died. That is still very prevalent in the African American community. So it's very hard to trust a healthcare system, first and foremost. Then second, you go to physicians, nurse practitioners, specialty physicians and nurse practitioners, and they don't look like you. There's a disparity for minority medical providers, making up 2% of the population of medical providers, when the African-American and other minority races make up 12 to 28%, if you're including Hispanic, Asian, and African-American together. And so it's hard to trust people who don't look like you. And then there has been, unfortunately, an era where we weren't trusted, where minority patients weren't trusted. And we're having an issue now with maternity fetal health, which Black women are dying in alarming numbers. And it has absolutely nothing to do with access. It has absolutely nothing to do with having the financial means or the resources. We have high profile people like Serena Williams, who almost lost her life during childbirth because they are not listened to when they speak about pain, when mm-hmm. they speak about the problems that they are having, their complaints go unanswered and ignored, and they are dying at alarming rates. And so I think in order to truly be able to accomplish decreasing that inequity in healthcare, we have to first understand why patients aren't paying for insurance, why patients aren't going to doctors when they have insurance, or why they're not trusting what they're supposed to do when it is being explained by doctors, because they don't look like them. They don't speak to their culture. They use words that they don't understand. Prior to my time in post-acute care, I was a nephrologist, and I was working in rural Florida, and I would get patients who say, I'm doing everything I'm supposed to do. They keep telling me to relieve sodium out of my diet, and I don't even use sodium. If the doctor mm-hmm. would have explained sodium is salt, how many lives could have been saved? How many
exactly.
people were prevented from being on dialysis or requiring kidney transplants? So I think it is a multi-system issue, and there are obstacles and opportunities on the patient shop side, as well as on the healthcare side, but also more importantly on the side of society.
I'm going to ask you to, we'll continue this conversation in just a moment. I just want to reintroduce Dr. Mobley. That's who you're listening to right now. And we're also here on the award-winning Docs in a Pod. I'm Gina Galavis Eisenberg, setting in for Ron Aaron. Our co-host is nurse practitioner Olivia Rahman. And our guest is Dr. Brooke Mobley, who you were just listening to. We're talking about National Minority Health Month and the healthcare challenges facing minorities in America. And Dr. Mobley, how do we change this? I mean, is it more recruitment of people of color in medical schools and nursing? I mean, what do you think?
So, yes, recruitment is important, but giving the same resources is also important. Getting into medical school, unfortunately, is more difficult for minorities. Minorities having the ability to pay for medical school. When I went to medical school, I had numerous colleagues who were generational doctors. So, mm-hmm. fortunately, for them, their family had the wealth or the riches in order to pay for this particular type of education. Now, in the state of America, medical students are coming out with $400,000 worth of debts. And sometimes people are first generation college grads. I was lucky enough to come from a family where my mother was the first generational college grad and instilled in me on the importance of education, but also instilled on me that she did not have the money to pay for anything beyond a bachelor's degree, so that I would have to take loans out in order to be a medical student. And I think it's important to have other minority physicians reach back to the communities that they came from, the communities that they represent, to show as role models that it is possible to become a physician. It is possible to get the loans. It is possible to look for scholarships and grants. Having that visibility and that representation to know that there is an African-American, Hispanic-American who can look like me, who I can intern with, who understands why Martin Luther King Day is important for me, and I would like not to have to work that day. To understand how important it is to speak to patients on a fourth grade reading level, because mm-hmm. that's average reading level for all Americans, regardless of what their race is. And I think we need to be more open, more conscious about the disparities, so that in the event you are encountering a person who looks different than you do, who has a different sexual preference than you do, or has a different religious background than you do, be open to the differences. Do a little research if you're a primary care doctor about the community you're in. If you are somebody who is not a native to Compton, but you are a physician in Compton, you might need to understand what goes on in that community. You might need to understand that there is a food desert and you are telling people to eat healthy, but they have to go 20 miles to go to a grocery store. But the majority of that population doesn't have the means to have a car, and trying right. to cart healthy groceries 20 miles away on public transportation is difficult. Or the fact that you can go to your corner store and buy a soda for $1.25, but go to the grocery store and a bunch of bananas cost $2.50. So mm-hmm. it's institutional, as well as it is healthcare system based. And I think we all need to take pride in understanding that there are differences in the people we are going to encounter and be respectful of them, even when we don't understand what they are. Take the time to ask those questions. Ask the older Asian patient why they don't look you in the eye. Well, it's because in their culture, it is a form of disrespect. Understand why, as a female physician, the Muslim male patient doesn't want to shake your hand, because that is a form of disrespect to shake the hand of a female in the Muslim religion. So it's bigger than what your race is. It is now what your sexual preference is, what you identify as. We live in a very diverse community, and we just need to understand that there will be differences and be open to truly understanding those differences to ensure that patients get the best care possible.
Thank you, Dr. Mobley. Olivia, how do you build trust with your patients, with your minority patients?
So, I mean, building trust with my minority patients is the same to me as any patient. I talk to them like I would anybody else, like a friend. I feel like
health literacy, I guess, is important when you're describing things to them, right?
It's like exactly, exactly, just like the sodium and the salt. That's so important to say that, because most of my patients, regardless of their race or ethnic background, they don't know what sodium is. They know it as salt. And then saying, oh, I don't add salt to foods, but they don't know that salt is in foods that they buy that are processed in cans and things. So sure, just talking. At a right lower education level, putting things in easy terms to understand. They didn't go to medical school. They didn't go to nurse practitioner school. So that's really where you start. And at least as far as I think, Dr. Mobley, what do you think?
No, I think that is absolutely correct. I think that is important to understand all of the things that you have discussed. And I think what you're doing is a great job in doing that. I think also it's key to ask people. I go to the doctors with my grandparents, and I don't like to announce that I am a doctor. And so we do have patients who, because of what they look like, we assume what their knowledge base is. And sometimes we speak down to them rather than speaking to them on a level that they understand. So sometimes just asking a patient, hey, I'm going to explain it like this. If at any point it is too difficult for you to understand, let me know, because I can try to simplify it for you. If you want more detail and you feel like I'm talking to you too simply, let me know, because then I can speak to you on a higher knowledge base. We don't know what people's basis is, but giving respect to feel open to tell you, oh, this is too much, or oh, this isn't enough, not only gives them the best chance at understanding, but it builds a relationship and a rapport. Sometimes people ask the question. When you ask that question, it may open up a lot of things that you didn't know they would have revealed had they been off, had they been closed off, had they had that trust barrier there. Ask them about their dogs, about their children. Ask them why their health is important to them. Who in your life is the reason why your health is important? And then, you know, they will open up and start revealing things that may be very imperative to your treatment for their diagnosis or for their preventative care.
You're so right. We're going to continue this discussion in just a moment. I'm Gina Galavis-Eisenberg, along with our co-host, nurse practitioner Olivia Rahman. And our special guest today is Dr. Brooke Mobley. You're listening to the award-winning Docs in a Pod.
Turning 65, it's time for an important choice, deciding what Medicare coverage is best for you. WellMed can help. When you become a WellMed patient, you can connect our primary care with a Medicare Advantage plan. WellMed doctors and care teams spend quality time with you, listening and learning about your health. WellMed and a Medicare Advantage plan could be right for you. Choose WellMed. Learn more at 866-433-5048. That's 866-433-5048.
Thanks so much for staying with us on the award-winning Docs in a Pod. I'm Gina Galavis-Eisenberg, along with our co-host, nurse practitioner Olivia Rahman, and our guest, Dr. Brooke Mobley. Brooke, let's talk more about access to healthcare. And one thing that's important, or it's on top of my mind, is advocacy. Bringing somebody with you when you're going for your checkup or you're in the hospital, how important is it when you're a minority to have that second set of ears and eyes?
I think it's imperative, and for a lot of different cultures, it's imperative if English is not your first language. It is imperative if you are in the geriatric population, because regardless of what you expect your mental status to be, once we start aging, there are certain aspects of cognition and memory that decreases. So it's important to have someone who can write things down for you, who could potentially translate for you if necessary. While a lot of our offices do a great job trying to cover the major second languages in our country, every now and again, there's a language that's going to throw you off. There's going to be a language that's not available on that translator line. So it's important to have somebody from your family who can best translate for you. You can speak Spanish and be from Puerto Rico, and you can speak Spanish and be from Cuba, and they'd be two totally different dialects. Mm-hmm. So have who could translate for you, who can culturally help explain things and remember things for you is important. Along with the advocate, though, it's important to have a document that has your name, your date of birth, your medications, your allergies, your major diagnosis, and the name and number of your primary care physician and specialty physicians. And I tell my geriatric population this specifically is to have that paper laminated some way and make sure it goes with you everywhere you go. People don't realize something as simple as a urinary tract infection can cause confusion. And it may be 2 days later, and the patient may be in the grocery store and automatically forget what they're there for as a complication of the UTI. And then there needs to be some kind of 911 or emergency access. And so having that little piece of paper somewhere on their body at least gives them the information that they need, who the emergency contacts are. We know to call her eldest daughter Tia at this number. So it's important to not only have somebody with you, but to also have certain documents that are going to assist you in any particular trouble. Making sure you have medical aid bracelets if you are allergic to aspirin and you are of a certain age, because the first thing they do is want to give you an aspirin when you come to the hospital. So just having those important resources will definitely alleviate some of those obstacles and make for a better clinical experience, especially in cases of emergencies.
Olivia, when you have patients come in and maybe it's a different family member each time, or maybe it's a neighbor because they have no immediate family, how important is it to have that person on your patient's medical documentation that's saying, yes, they can call and ask questions for me?
Sure. Well, it's incredibly important because we will not give any information to somebody who's not listed in your medical chart. That can be your husband, your mom, your daughter. I don't care who you are. But if we haven't gotten permission from the patient, we can't really release medical information to you. That's what HIPAA is. So if you have somebody who you have as your advocate, that is your translator, that is your, you know, eyes and ears when maybe you are a little confused on some days, that they have to be in your chart. I have quite a few patients who English is not their first language, and their daughter or their son will call to schedule appointments, to ask questions. And if they're not in the chart, we can't really help them with that. So it is very important.
With your minority patients, and this is a question for both of you, what kind of diseases or illnesses do you try to make them aware? Hey, you fall in this category. You need to be mindful about this. Dr. Mobley, what may be the top three that we need to be aware of?
So I like to categorize it as what comes first, the chicken or the egg. And so for the majority of the minority population, there's one disease process that puts them at risk for two or three other disease processes that are much more terminal, much more critical. I want to start with obesity. Mm-hmm. Obesity, due to lack of resources like food deserts, due to cultural differences back in the times of slavery, African-American people did not have refrigerators. They got the scraps of food, especially pigs, and they just learned how to make them good. How do you make things good? You season it a lot. How do you preserve things that's out in the refrigerator? You put a lot of salt on it. So there have been recipes passed down from generation to generation that are now, unfortunately, inappropriate for the diets that we have now. And obesity puts you at increased risk for high blood pressure and hypertension, which puts you at risk for heart disease, which puts you at risk for renal disease. If we could combat obesity in the minority communities just by education, by increasing resources, grocery stores that are appropriately priced, education on how to make those traditional foods, but in accordance to what is going to be healthier for your body type, I think we could decrease heart disease, hypertension, and kidney disease, because those three diseases are what's killing, unfortunately, minority communities. And I think it's imperative to do things like having educational cooking classes. I used to do that in rural Florida. I made a soul food cookbook that was in accordance to people who are hypertension and renal disease. And it was important to me because it runs in my family. My grandfather got a kidney transplant. My grandmother was on dialysis. And so it was important that I not only educate my family, but educate other families that looked like me. I think obesity is the one diagnosis that I think if we target it hard and fierce, that we would see a substantial decrease in the critical and terminal chronic conditions that are a complication of obesity.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think minorities and women, especially when it's time for our checkup, we won't go because we don't want to get on the scale. We don't want to know. We don't want to be told what we already know. And we can't figure out how to get rid of it.
That's a social norm that we fight with, especially with all the plastic surgery today and what people see on Instagram and TV that is supposed to be the ideal person. It's important just to have these conversations with your patients that, listen, I am not judging you based on your weight, but what I am trying to do is to come up with a plan so that I can help you with this problem. You can't know how to do better with weight loss or how to improve with physical activity if you don't know where you have to start from. And so I think it's just pure education, having no judgment, making sure when you talk to people about diagnoses and obesity, they don't feel judged, they don't feel ostracized, and they don't feel criticized.
So Olivia, if we can control that, the obesity, everything else kind of like falls in place, correct? No, heart problems and diabetes. And what Wellman has a lot of programs for patients to help them get on track. Talk a little bit about that.
Sure. So one program that I use very frequently is called Dial a Dietitian. So a lot of my patients, correct, they don't know what to eat and how to cook things in a healthy way. And or really true, whatever foods you are able to get at the stores, what can you do with them to make a delicious meal in a healthy way? So I like to utilize that resource. That's a free resource to speak with a nutritionist to make a meal plan that is best suited for you, your health concerns, your weight, your goals. So that's a great resource to start. And then a lot of insurance programs also have free memberships to gyms, Silver Sneakers, YMCA, things like that. So diet, you know, goes with exercise as well. So increasing, even if it's just walking 15, 20, 30 minutes a day, will help with weight, with your cardiovascular health, and all of that essentially can fall in line, of course, depending on your other health concerns and family history.
There's just so much to talk about on this topic because it's not just one thing. It's a lot of things. It's recruitment of doctors and nurses and also helping patients feel at ease with their doctors and knowing that, yes, ask your doctor quickly because we'll be wrapping up in a couple of minutes. Dr. Mobley, how can we gain trust in the minority communities when it comes to medical care?
I think first and foremost, understanding the community you're practicing in and finding out what the major culture, race, religion is in that community and doing a little research for yourself to understand. Using that research you do to become relatable to them. Say something about their culture or their community in a way that they understand, that you respect and you acknowledge it. Make sure you listen very carefully and just be as friendly as you would to anybody else. You have to build a relationship and a rapport if you want them to truly trust the information that you give them. You can have the best pill in the world, but if you cannot get people to take it appropriately, it means absolutely nothing.
So I guess when they come in for a checkup, it's like, How are you doing today? How can I help you today?
Yes. And say you're in Orlando area and you know everybody loves the Magic. Hey, did you see that Magic win on the game? They'd either say, I'm not a Magic fan, I'm a Bull fan. Or yes, so Gilbert dropped 35 points. It's just getting to know what's important to people and making sure in your notes, you make note. Hey, they love their dog, Doc. So when that patient comes in for a follow-up, you can say, hey, how's Doc doing today? Those kind of small things help build that relationship and rapport.
That's exactly. Let's just treat everyone like people and let's just be kind. And I think that will lead to a lot of other discussions. Well, we ran out of time today. We could go on for a long time on this subject. So thank you, Dr. Brooke Mobley, for joining us today on the award-winning Docs in a Pod. And thank you again to our co-host, nurse practitioner, Olivia Rahman. Well, I call you Dr. Rahman sometimes, I'm sure. I'm Gina Galaviz Eisenberg. And in the words of the late Charles Osgood, I'll see you all on the radio.
Executive producers for Docs in a Pod are Dan Calderon and Leah Madrano. Associate producer is Charisse Pendleton. Thank you for listening to Docs in a Pod, presented by WellMed. We welcome your emails with suggestions and comments on this program at radio@wellmed.net. And be sure to listen next week to Docs in a Pod, presented by WellMed.